Dear reader, this is a tale for all those who are an avid reader of penny dreadfuls or enjoy scouring the newspapers for the latest sordid crimes. It is a tale I became aware of after my father died and was subsequently corroborated by my uncle. I first became aware of it as a young boy when I entered the attic on a dare. The attic space had always been off-limits. It was in the days before electricity in the house, when the attic was seen by us children as a dangerous place of darkness and nightmare. With hindsight, not a notion that was ever discouraged or corrected by our elders. We would lie awake some nights, listening to the wind whistle through the ancient eaves, or perhaps gaze at the yellowing ceiling as our wide eyes tried to follow the mice as they scratched their paths across the aging floorboards of the attic above us. On some particularly dark nights, the wind would change its tune. It would howl around the rafters like a wild banshee, giving us cause to huddle closely and tug the blankets up to our noses for fear of what monsters it might conceal. Very occasionally, we would hear the all-too-real clump, clop of feet. On these nights, we would lay very still, straining our ears to listen for any clue of who it might be, or what it might be. And so, over time, in the minds of us children, the hatch at the top of the stairs became a doorway to another world, where creatures lurked that could swallow us with one bite, where spectres and ghouls and the dark denizens of the netherworld watched us through the tiny cracks in the boards and licked their lips in anticipation at the mouth-wateringly succulent meals that ran around playing with wooden trains and porcelain dolls by day, and huddled together to stare back at them by night. Then one day, the dare was made. I was to enter the attic for the first time. I was to enter the attic, go to the little round window at the far end, and wave at my fellows through the dirty glass as they stood safely on the country lawn in the warm embrace of the summer sun. You must understand, dear reader, that it was by no means a choice. To refuse would have been unthinkable. As the eldest boy, it would have meant losing my place as the leader of our little group. It would have meant cowardice, ridicule, and defeat. Thus it was on that warm summer afternoon that I left my companions in the garden to begin my intrepid ascent. I crept up the stairs and made a rudimentary ladder using a chair with my toy trunk balanced upon it. I climbed up and paused as I reached the summit. My legs wobbled, due to fear or an unsure footing, I remember not, as I stared at that infamous hatch now in reach above me. I pushed it up until there was a crack, just large enough for me to peer through. I remember the beam of sunlight from the little window at the far end. It was the only light, and whilst my eyes acclimatized to the dingy atmosphere, I remember watching the tiny particles of dust swirling lazily in the yellow beam. Hauling myself up, I scraped a knee on the rough wooden boards, but paid it no mind as I shot a look to my right, searching the gloom for whatever creature had just scampered for the safety of its nook or cranny. The atmosphere was not what I had expected. It was humid and stifling. The more I moved, the more dust reared up in anger like a cobra, catching in my throat and making it hard to breathe without coughing. There was a mixture of mustiness, sweetness, and a pungent acrid scent, which I did not recognize at the time, but some time later I would remember when I smelled ammonia in a chemistry class for the first time. The wooden beams that held the roof were thick and old, partly rotted in some places and full of wormholes in others. The dust was thick upon the floor, but the cobwebs, which I'd expected to be thick and wide across the attic space, were in fact tiny, and limited to only the lowest, most inaccessible areas under the eaves, where the wind blew in a steady supply of insects for them to catch. I stood up under the highest part of the roof. There was a clear path to the window before me, but the space to either side of that path was a jumble of aging furniture, trunks, and bric-a-brac. It was to these dusty remnants of a bygone age that I cast my attention as I passed, wary, as only a child can be, of what might be hidden amongst them. And there it was, standing to my left, creeping along beside me. I leapt aside, my heart in my mouth and a scream on my lips, when I suddenly noticed that the boy in the mirror had reacted the same way. Later, I would smile at myself for being so stupid, yet would never admit, until now, how close I had come to running for the hatch and swinging back down to the fresh air and safety below. I do not recall how long it took me to reach the window, but reach it I did. The others had obviously grown bored with waiting and were running around the garden beneath me. I had to rap the window several times and clear away the cobwebs before I caught their attention. My chest swelled with pride at the open-mouthed faces staring up at me in awe from below. I soaked it all in, and before long they were gesturing me to hurry back to them. Pride had me in its grasp. I could not wait to tell my tale of daring to a spellbound, marvelling audience. I turned to run back to the hatch and the warm safety of the daylight world beyond. Before I knew what was happening, though, I was falling. I landed hard on an old chest, which knocked the wind out of me, before I bounced onto the floor beside it, chipping my tooth, the final dagger thrust into the heart of my jubilation. As I lay there, gasping for breath in the swirling eddies of dust with the warm taste of copper in my mouth, I heard the creak. I turned towards the chest to see the lid slowly rising and falling backward, bouncing briefly against the side of a chest of drawers which stood behind it. My heart leapt into my throat to strangle the scream that had already begun. I lay there stiffly, eyes wide, waiting for whatever was going to come out of that chest to see me and pull me into the nether realms, never to be seen or heard from again. But nothing came. As soon as my breathing returned to normal, my child's curiosity emboldened me. I hauled myself to my knees and crawled over to the chest to peer inside. It was full of papers, journals, letters, cuttings, and more. What were they? Why had they been kept? I began to sift through and read snippets here and there, and my curiosity was piqued. Then, beneath a pile of journals at one end of the chest, was a stout metal box, roughly 2 feet square. It was heavy and had no lock or lid or manner of entry that I could see. Beside it were a number of other trinkets, a silver pocket watch, an old inkwell, a stethoscope, a small wooden box inlaid with red satin and containing a wedding ring and a finger. Yes, a finger in a jar of liquid. I was no longer afraid, merely puzzled by these curiosities from a time long past. That is where my father found me that day. I was sat on the floor reading journals and clippings and letters from that trunk, as he called it. I took my beating, a tougher beating than I believed I deserved, before being sent off to the bathtub to clean off the dirt and dust from the attic. Even then, I still remember begging to be allowed to go through the chest, to finish what I had started, but to no avail. In the end, exasperated, my father told me that he would leave it to me in his will, but whilst he was alive, nobody would have access to it again. I remember the solemnity in his face, the fear in his eyes. Fear for me? Fear for what the chest contained? At the time, I knew not. All I knew was that when I agreed to his terms, I would not forget them, as I believe he hoped I would. For my father's part, the next day he fitted a bolt and padlock to the attic hatch to dissuade me from reneging on my promise. It was 12 years later when my father died. I mourned the great man for a week before moving back into the old house and beginning the terrible duty of putting his affairs to rest. The urge to find that trunk once more became overwhelming on the second day. If I'm honest with myself, I would have looked for it on the first day if I could have found the key to the padlock or a set of bolt cutters. I finally discovered a set of keys at the back of one of his desk drawers, and it was one of these that fitted and snapped open the padlock which had held me at bay for so long. My heart was aflutter as I entered the attic for only the second time in my life. Returning to where the chest had been, I was dismayed to find that it had gone. I pulled away furniture, emptied drawers, removed dust sheets, until finally, with some relief, I found what I was looking for, hidden away behind as much old furniture as my father could have managed. I pulled it free and hauled it with some effort down through the hatch, where I spent the rest of the day reading what I had been waiting to read for the last 12 years. It has taken me nigh on another year to compile the letters, excerpts, and other paperwork, some of which you are about to read. I have tried to compile it chronologically. In some places, this has meant splitting journal entries into two or more excerpts to fit other entries in between. I have done this where the content is relevant to the time frame, or where I believe they work better for the progression of the tale which unfolds. Read them at your leisure, dear reader, but at the same time, read them at your peril. This is not an account for the faint of heart, and not one you are likely to forget. But it is all there, in black and white. P.M.